Hello, folks, and welcome back to another episode of the Outdoor Evolution Podcast. So, as most of my listeners know at this point, I'm definitely someone who has bobbed and weaved creatively over the past few years. Aside from my main established, I guess, creative outlet like my YouTube channel, Darwin on the Trail, I have tried my hand at other creative things over the past couple of years, film work, a commercial media company. I mean, even this podcast that you're listening to was a creative pivot for me a couple of years ago from what I typically do. And I'm, as most of you have been able to decipher at this point, because of the field I've chosen to be in, and as my creative outlet, I have definitely battled with my mental health from it. I mean, hell, that's what the whole first episode of this podcast was. If you go back and listen to that, it's basically me realizing that I had a problem and needed to be checked. I needed to check myself. If you go back and listen to really a bunch of episodes from season one, you can hear me struggling with my mental health. It's something that I've really tried hard to do over the past couple of years. And one of the main reasons I quit, I guess, quote unquote, YouTube in the spring of 2022 is because I needed to check myself. Since I've decided to start making personal content again this year, and if you've been subscribed to the channel and you've been following, you'll know that I've been trying to put out as many videos as I possibly can with the time that I have allotted for it and share my creative side, I guess, consistently or somewhat consistently again with the public. I figured it would be a great idea to have today's guest host on to discuss something that I feel like we have a pretty similar point of view on, and a man that I creatively revere as a photographer, Mr. Nick Page. What's up, dude?
Well, it's fun to come on your show.
Yeah, man.
Thank you for the kind words, because I think I've probably watched you longer than you've watched me.
Have you?
I think so, because, like, you know, I'm a larger guy, right? Which means that I hike vicariously through you, because you're not a larger man.
But I was. I was a larger man.
Were you? I didn't know.
Did you know that? You didn't know that?
Oh, no idea.
I think at my biggest, I was 275.
That is. You're tall, though, right?
Like, how tall are you? I'm 6'1".
Okay. Yeah, like, I can't envision that at all.
Yeah, I was big my whole life. I was a super chunky kid, and then all through high school, I mean, there's pictures of me, like, you know, I was the big guy, like, in the group of friends, like, I was the big, you know, kind of the comic relief big guy.
Wow. But
there always seems to be one in a group of friends. Yeah, that was me. And then, you know, around 18, 19, I lost a bunch of weight, so.
That's awesome.
Enough about me.
But yeah, it's cool because, like, you know, when I first started commenting on your videos, I think you commented back that you liked my channel. I was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. He even has a clue who I am. That's awesome. But I've watched your content for a long time. And I think that when we've talked on Instagram in the past, you know, and have our little chats, it always kind of comes back to this theme, this conversation of, you know, mental health and, you know, creative pigeonholes, and, like, there's so much that we have in common, I think, that surely we can figure out something to talk about in this podcast episode.
Yeah, no, I feel like it. I know we've been kind of, like, talking about it and bantering about it a little bit, like, on Instagram and stuff, and we became friends through social media, no less, kind of what we're talking about today. So it does have its positives, damn it. But, you know, I guess to a little bit of a backstory, I feel like most people that listen to this podcast probably know my creative backstory for the most part. Give me a little bit of, like, your, I guess, getting into photography and then that kind of branching into everything else that you've done. And you know, I guess in this, it always sounds weird when I say it, but it's like when I talk to I always say it for myself, like, the situation that I'm in, the situation I put myself in. How did you get in the situation you put yourself in?
Well, my creative journey, I guess you'd call it, has been way different than the norm, probably. A lot of people, they go to art school for something. And I did go to art school for, like, one quarter. So I have you know, going way back, I've always been a musician. There's, like, drums and guitars and stuff in my background for those that might be seeing the video, but, you know, I've always been a musician. I was really into audio production, and I used to record the local bands, and I went to the Art Institute of Seattle for a short time. Oh. Until I lost my funding for it, and then I just ended up with a bunch of debt. But I went to school for audio production. Right. And I was just a blue-collar guy working at a golf course. I was a golf course greenskeeper for like 12 years. And I stumbled across photography just simply because I was kind of interested in the videography side of things. And I've always kind of wanted to try my hand at like a little videography or amateur filmmaking, that kind of thing. And what happened was I hurt my back really bad. I herniated a couple discs, had a pair of surgeries. And on the second, injury episode, I was actually bedridden, like 100% bedridden for a month and a half.
Oh, wow.
Waiting for that back surgery that felt like it was never going to come. And like, I was in such pain that I couldn't even walk to the bathroom. I'm like peeing into milk jugs and stuff. Ooh. I was absolutely miserable and just in agony because of all the nerve pain that I had.
Jesus.
And to kind of get through that episode, I was super depressed because, like, of course I am. Like at that time, I'm like a single parent and had to let my kid go live with his mom. And it was a really hard time. And so rather than watching television for hours and hours and hours on end, which would have been just worse for my mental health, I decided to learn something. And that something at that point was like, you know what, I'm going to start watching some videography tutorials on YouTube.
Yeah.
And this was 10 years ago now. And I sat there for a month and a half. I didn't own a camera of any kind. And I just watched YouTube for a month and a half, learning everything about exposure triangles and, you know, all of the technical side of things.
Who's your number one channel? Who's your go-to?
Back then I was learning from of course the Tony and Chelsea Northrups of the world.
Oh, yeah.
and Kai from Digital Rev back in the day. And, you know, all of those channels. And so I sat there and I absorbed all this information for a month and a half, and I had my back surgery finally, and I saved up and bought my first camera, and turned out that I actually liked the photography side of things as well. And, you know, fast forward about a year, I was making more on the weekends photographing, like, you know, portraits and weddings and stuff. I was making more on my weekend gig, which was photography, than I was all week long at my main gig, which was being a greenskeeper. And so it just organically changed into Nick becoming a full-time photographer. About a year and a half after I got my first camera, I was able to quit my day job and pursue photography full time. And at that time, photography for me was like weddings and portraits and real estate. And
I was going to say, a lot of people get started in weddings. I was going to ask you if weddings was the start.
For
all the gear geeks, not to cut you off.
Yeah.
What was your first camera?
It was a Canon T3i.
Nice.
Canon Rebel T3i.
My first like legit camera, I guess, was a T6i.
Oh, so there you go. Yeah. Well, that kind of dates us right there.
Like, it does, for sure.
the beginning of photography for me was like I was Nick the everything photographer.
Yeah.
Simply because, you know, it wasn't until later that I started getting better at landscape photography just because it's harder, I think. You know, I was.
Oh, God, yeah. I think so.
Especially the post-processing side of it and like the travel part of it. Like you have to, and nobody really, and, you know, talks too much about this, but you have to have the ability to get out and travel and spend that time away from a day job before you even have the opportunity to do much landscape photography.
Yeah, you got to hunt these places down, right? It's not like, you know, street photography is, if you live in a city,
you
like,
have the
you
opportunity.
Can get into street photography. Yeah, pretty easy, right? But
yeah,
if you're going to get into like amazing landscapes, you got to go where the amazing landscapes are.
Yeah, and that's either going to cost you time or money or sometimes both.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that landscape photography happened later for me. You know, it was like 4 years down the road. And like at the peak of my doing weddings, I was shooting like 28 weddings a year. I was shooting a lot of weddings.
Wow.
And so it was a really difficult thing to give up, not because I loved doing weddings, but because I became dependent on the income from those weddings. That's a very difficult amount of change to give up because, you know, weddings are pretty lucrative.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah,
absolutely.
That eventually led to me, like, you know, as I got better at landscape photography, I kind of started my YouTube channel and started sharing some of the little things or the little adventures or the little doodads that I would buy. And I created my YouTube channel around that kind of stuff. And honestly, I owe a lot of my place in the landscape photography community, and I'm using air quotes. I owe a lot of
air quotes on this podcast.
Even yeah, exactly. Can see air quotes. I owe a lot of that simply to YouTube because I was visible, you know, and
yeah.
in a sea of photographers, I was one of the few American, landscape photography vlogger types. You know, there is now, but especially back then, there was not a lot of American landscape photography vloggers. There's a lot of British ones, you know, the Thomas Heatons of the world. And
yeah, yeah. And I was going to say Heaton is the first thing that popped into my head.
Exactly. And he kind of pioneered it, and he inspired me to start doing what I did. But he also inspired a lot of, you know, people in his region to do it as well. So I think because of Thomas, you see a lot of British, you know, or UK-based landscape photography vloggers, but not a lot of American ones. And you're starting to see them now, but in a lot of my station, a lot of my place, a lot of my situation comes from the fact that I started a YouTube channel and I was a little bit more visible than some other photographers.
I was going to ask you, like, in the weird question that is like, what, you know, you have a pretty decent following on like Instagram and stuff. Like, what do you think that mainly came from? YouTube is kind of like, what you think you got known more?
Yeah. I mean, I always had, YouTube, and I also had actually several different podcasts. I got my start in podcasting back in the day with the Improved Photography podcast. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of brought in as a co-host, and then that morphed into a couple other podcasts that they had, one of which was Tripod, which is a funny name for
Brilliant
a podcast.
Name for a podcast.
Right. Tripod.
God, I hope that I hope somebody like put a trademark on that.
Right.
That's fantastic.
And so, you know, I was the host of that. And then once that kind of dissolved, because I didn't own it, I wasn't the manager of it all. So one day he was like, we're just going to not do this anymore. And I'm like, well, that's nice. Wish I could have had a say in that. So I started the Landscape Photography Podcast, which is my podcast. And, you know, I haven't always been the best at posting regularly, but I like to think that I made up for the lack of quantity with a little bit higher quality. So
I'm preaching to the choir, man. Like, I'll go through like spurts where I'm like, all right, I'm going to put everything into the podcast, just record all these episodes. And then like, I get out like a little chunk of them.
Yeah.
And then nothing happens for like a good 6 months.
Yeah.
And then it's back, you know, back in like, you know, like right now is a really like big, like, ooh, I'm ready to record all these episodes. And, but I feel like that's how like being a creative in general works, right? Like I try to explain this to people all the time. It's, you know, even I have like a studio and stuff here where I have tons of video that I've shot, and especially shot over the last year. With a lot of travels that I've done, of all this content that I want to put out on YouTube, right? I have hard drives full of it. I have talking head videos that I've shot. But it's like I come in here and the creative process, I was trying to explain it to my wife not too long ago, and we've been married for 16 years and she knows that I struggle with this, but it's like it goes in spurts. Like you can sit in front of a computer to edit something all day long for 12 hours. And nothing happens. And you're just like, I don't feel inspired. I got nothing. And all of a sudden you're about to leave and shut off the lights. And then it's like, it goes off and you're like, oh crap. Now I got to jam out like 4 hours and then you're there. So it's like, I feel like it's the same with podcasting, of like where there's these little creative spurts that happen where you just feel great about it and you're super creative. And then it just dies and goes away. I was trying to explain to her, cause I'm a big music geek and you and I've been able to connect on music. It's why musicians will like, you know, put out an album and then they tour the album and then they go dead radio silent for like years.
Because they're like, burnt the hell out after playing the same songs for every night for
Man, being creative wears you out.
Yeah.
It really does like take a lot of, you know, it puts a lot of stress on your brain and your heart and your soul. And
well, and that's the thing that, you know, I don't think that people think about is like, I love using music analogies because sometimes it's easier to explain it. You know, as a musician, let's take my favorite band, which is Tool. Let's say that, you know, Tool records an album, they tour on it, and they tour on it for like a year and a half. And at the end of that year and a half, the last thing they want to do is play those same songs over and over and over. Or, you know, maybe the last thing they want to do is play a Tool song over and over. But it doesn't mean that they're not pursuing other creative things. Like, it doesn't mean that they're not creatively inspired. They're just not creatively inspired to play a Tool song right now, because each one of those members, they're a three-dimensional human that has more than one interest. And it's such a thing that we do to ourselves, especially like once you realize just a little bit of popularity, or like you gain a little following, you get your little niche, you know, people expect that one thing from you. If you're Lynyrd Skynyrd, you have to play Freebird.
Play Freebird, yeah. And absolutely.
If you're Nick Page, you take a landscape photo and that's just what you do. And I'm not interested in hearing anything else you have to do or have to say or anything else you do. That's just what you do. And
yeah, man.
Dance, monkey, dance. You know, it's like your thing.
It's something that I've battled with. And, you know, like when I opened up the podcast, like what I said was I go in these like weird things back and forth of like, I love, you know, don't get me wrong. And I've said it a billion times on this podcast. Like, I love hiking and backpacking. I love gear. I love all of that. Mm-hmm. Like that'll never leave me. I'm not just like, oh, well, I don't like this now. It's why I gave the last 8 years of my life to it. Right. But whenever you're a true creative, it's like, in order to be a true creative, you have to constantly be creating. If you're just doing the same thing over and over again, it kind of defeats the whole purpose of being a creative. Like, to be a creative, you're trying new things. You're going down different creative paths. You're, you know, trying to figure out like, oh, well, this is cool and I can do this. And it almost sounds cocky to say it, but it's like, I can put a blindfold on and do this. Like, this is easy. Like, you know.
It becomes formulaic, you know, like you're doing the same thing and it's no longer, you know, writing a song. It becomes just playing a song, you know, and and there's not a lot of creative fulfillment in that. There's not as much.
Well, you know, and it's, if you look at like, I'll talk like my favorite band, my favorite musician of all time is probably the Pumpkins, Smashing Pumpkins, all time favorite band. Billy Corgan is, like, love him or hate him, he's probably one of my all-time favorite artists. And it's because, like, that dude is constantly, like, going down these weird creative paths and, like, doing stuff that 99% of his audience hates. They don't like it at all, right?
Just shut up and play Bullet with Butterfly Wings.
Exactly. Yeah. And then he does it. And then, like, what's kind of sad, though, about him, and I don't know, like, if you follow him at all, but, like, stuff like even like that song, right? Like when that song came out and that album came out, like he was told by everybody, this is terrible. Like, you're the guy from Siamese Dream. You're the guy that plays the song today. Like, this isn't you. This is trash and everybody hates it. And then like he puts it out, he takes all this abuse from it. And then when he creatively moves on to the next thing, because he's done with it, right? Like he put out the album, he did the interviews, he toured it. He put out the music videos. Then when he's ready to move on to, anyone that's a Pumpkins fan will follow this, Adore, which is completely a different album. It's kind of like electronic and stuff. Then the audience is like, oh, hey, this is a really great album. But that new thing that you're doing, that's terrible. And it's just like a repeat cycle of every single time. And that really is kind of how it feels to be a creative, like no matter what you do. And I've listened to tons of different interviews and podcasts with directors, actors, painters, and I feel like it's like a common thread that goes through the creative process. It's like you are known as this guy or this person, and this is your niche. And I've talked about this. Anyone that's been listening to this podcast since day one, like I've repeated this a lot, talking about niche. And it's like, do I have a niche on YouTube? Of course I do. Like, I'm the backpacking gear guy. How it happened, I wasn't trying to be the backpacking gear guy. It just kind of happened and that label was kind of put on me. And it's been great and it's led to amazing things. It's allowed me to do great things. I have a great audience. Every time I'm like, I'll go to the grocery store and some random person, it scares the hell out of me, will like walk up to me and be like, hey, are you Darwin? I'm just like, oh God, do I owe you money? Like, it always freaks me out because I don't expect it. And then I always have a really nice conversation with people. And I love that interaction. I love talking to people. And I love all the things it has, I guess, quote unquote, afforded me, right? Like, it was the moonshot. Like I randomly put myself out there, kind of like you, like you randomly bought a camera and you're like, you know what? I'm going to shoot some photos at a wedding. And then that turned into the moonshot of then becoming quote unquote, like famous for a certain thing. It's a moonshot. Like that all of a sudden that just, you know, it just happens. Very grateful for all that. But the true creative in me always wants to try to go down these other creative paths and try things. So I don't, I guess, you know, however you want to put it, I think you called it like putting yourself in a creative corner, or I like saying putting myself in a box or pigeonholing myself of just always being that person. And I think that has wreaked havoc on my own mental health, because it's hard for me, and I think it's anybody, and anyone that I think is a creative that's listening to this could probably, you know, feel the same way, or it probably connects to, resonates, that it does start wreaking havoc on your mental health, because you go through these periods where like you're being creative and you love what you're creating because it's a new creative path. And everyone's like, this is great. You're great. All this is great. And they're patting you on the head and they're patting you on their head and the endorphins are going and you're like, yay, I'm a good boy. And then, right. And then your creative heart gets to that point where you're like, all right, well, this has been fun, but now I want to do this.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden that same group of people, it's just like, no, you're a bad boy. This is bad. And then you're like, well, wait a minute, what did I do? And you start kind of having this internal dialogue with yourself of like, oh, like, well, now these people don't like what I'm doing. And should I, like, am I doing it for them? Am I doing it for me? Am I doing it for, you know?
Yeah, why the hell am I doing this at all? Like,
yeah, man.
And you start to ask yourself questions because, you know, it's no longer scratching. You're no longer hungry to do the same kind of content that you used to be hungry to do.
Right.
And you're faced with that situation of, okay, do I do what is expected of me, or do I do what I feel like doing? And the problem with our situation is that, you know, our business kind of depends on, you know, money coming in, right? Like
it's hard. Yeah.
We've literally painted ourselves in not only into a creative corner, but also a financial corner where like, this is my skill set. This is what people know me for. If I attempt to do anything else, I might be mowing grass again, you know, like I don't know that I want to work on a golf course again.
The situation's real, sir.
Right.
I've been having that same feeling a lot lately.
Yeah.
It also, if you're like me, and I don't know if you're like this, maybe not, maybe I'm just alone, and I guess I'm not alone on it. I'm sure there's other people, but maybe I'm an idiot for it. But like, I will try to do all of it, right? Like I'll try to juggle all of it. Like over a year ago, I was juggling all of it. I was still trying to put out YouTube videos to, I guess, quote unquote, appease the people that want that. My audience, and not just because, you know, a part of it was my livelihood, but also because, like, you know, there's a part of me that's like, well, you don't want to let those people down. Yep. Like, these people are here and they're supporting you, and you don't want to let those people down. So you're doing that. And then I'm like, oh, but my creative brain that needs to do something different is like, oh, well, I'll also do a podcast. Oh, well, I'll also, you know, shoot a film. Oh, well, I'll also do some commercial work. So I'm like, then spreading myself super thin and juggling myself creatively. And then you're not giving 100% of yourself to
any one thing.
Which is like, I think in order to be truly a successful creative person, you got to give your whole heart and soul to something.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at either one of us, the reason that we have a following at all is because at some point we did put our whole creative, you know, selves into our YouTube channel or whatever it happens to be.
Absolutely.
You know, for a musician, it's their music. And when the musician no longer is enthused about their music, they stop writing, you know, and that band slowly dissolves. And it's really important for just the sake of our productivity and our creative selves to make sure that we're taking care of our mental well-being, because without being in a good place mentally, we're going to be putting out really hollow, really empty content that nobody's going to relate with.
Yeah. And I felt myself, you know, it's actually weird, and I'll admit it here on this episode, of there was there towards the end, I'll call it the end. it sounds so grim. But in 2021, I was hardcore struggling with my own mental health with all of it. Because, you know, I had made a decision in 2018, and I've talked about it on the podcast, that, you know, I wanted to start doing a media company and I wanted to work mm-hmm. on a short film. And at the time, you know, I didn't want to go out and get my triple crown and through hike the CDT. I wanted to shoot a documentary about the Arizona Trail, a smaller, lesser known trail at the time, because that's what my creative heart wanted, right?
Yeah.
And then I almost started, like, for a while, I thought that I was fighting the audience, or I was battling the audience. And it took me a couple years to realize I was fighting myself with it. But I was like, I would almost get angry. I would get upset, and I would become, a smart ass. Anyone that I ever left a smart ass comment to, I'm sorry. I really am. Mental health is a son of a bitch. But you know, I would get upset because I would put something out, and you know, where it was different, and I would expect the audience to be there for it, to be there for this new thing that they didn't sign up for.
Right.
But I was like, well, if you like me, you should like this.
Yeah.
And then, so I started battling with it. And then, you know, as they always say, like, don't read the comments. Anybody that's a creative, anyone that has a YouTube channel, an Instagram, if you say you don't read the comments, you are a liar. You're a liar. Everybody does it. You know you do it.
And if you read the comments and it doesn't bother you in some way, shape, or form, you must be a psychopath. like, how can you not let those mean trolling comments get you just a little bit?
And I think that we're humans, right? So it's like, you know, everybody says like, yeah, but somebody left one mean comment. But like, you know, there's hundreds of great comments. And it's like, you're not wrong. You're 100% right. But like the lizard brain, right, mm-hmm. wants to focus on the one negative thing that you just can't let go. And again, if you're creative and you really put your heart and soul and blood and sweat and tears into something, it stings when somebody's like, this is garbage. This sucks. You suck. And it's so weird. It's like, why should I care about what a random stranger that I'll never meet in a billion years, that probably lives in his parents' basement and, you know, now I'm just being mean. says about me, a person that they don't know, because we're human and, you know, humans are made of emotions and it just kind of starts this roller coaster. So I went through a really hard thing with that. And then there towards the end, kind of getting back to your point of, I felt like the videos I was putting out, there's a point to where I was putting out videos and I would see people leave comments and they would say like, your heart just doesn't really seem in this anymore. Like, great video, but like, are you okay? Mm-hmm. There's something that doesn't in me.
Are you okay?
Dude, all the time. Yeah. And like anybody that put that, thank you for asking. Like, it was amazing that anybody noticed that and legit asked me if I was okay.
Yeah.
Like, because I wasn't okay. And reading those things, you know, I would read something like that and be like, well, screw this person. Like, I think this video is great. You know, like then the ego comes out, like the cocky creative ego, and been like, my heart didn't seem into this. You know how long it took me to make this video? You know how long it took me? So it got to the point to where it kind of bubbled up and boiled up. And then 2021, I went out and thru-hiked the CDT almost out of spite of like, you know, because I didn't want to do it. And then I was like, you know what? No, I'm going to do it just to prove a point. And then I went out and then while I was out there, I had already made the decision. Like, I'm going to stop doing the YouTube channel because this is messing with me.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to get it not to mess with me, so I'm going to have to check myself. And the only way I know how to check myself is to check out and take some time. And like, maybe I'll never come back to it, but maybe I will. And like, I don't know. And that's why, you know, again, I made the, in air quotes, the I quit video over a year ago, because I quit being that person and I quit being that representation of myself that was going to like put out consistent YouTube videos and appease the audience and fight myself. And I took a year off and now like I'm feeling much better and much more creative and inspired. And now I'm kind of on my own clock and feel a little reset. But yeah, it's so hard of like it. And it's something that I don't think a lot of people understand that consume the media. And everyone that I know that has like the smallest YouTube channel or smallest Instagram following to people that have massive channels and massive followings, they're always like, oh, I kind of get what you mean by that. It's like, until you do it, it's really hard to understand like how it could affect you or how it, you know, like why you do read the comments or focus on the negative comment or whatever.
one of the biggest differences between being on YouTube and being like an actor in a movie is that we're just being ourselves. We're playing ourselves. So when people leave right. those mean comments, it feels like a personal attack. Every right. single one of them, like it's hard. And it's even worse if they're a little bit right, you know, because yeah. the last thing I need to hear
it's
in a video,
worse, yeah.
like the last comment I need to read is like, why are you so fat? Or like, why are you breathing so hard? Like those are the type of comments that, you know, like, of course you're just pointing out the obvious, but like, who does that?
I get a lot of like, why don't you cut off your ugly ass beard?
Yeah, I get, the, like, I get the same thing. Like, I would take you seriously if you didn't have an animal on your chin. You know,
I'm like, maybe I should cut my beard off.
But one of the differences between how you handled it and how I've kind of, I haven't handled anything, let's be honest. But the way that I dealt with it is that like,
that's just, what this is, Nick. This is an intervention,
right? That's what this is. You know, when I would get those influxes of mean comments, and by the way, kind of backing up, that's not always been a thing. There's something that happens like in the growth yes. of a YouTube channel where yes. like, you know, in the beginning, everybody's patting you on the back because you are the underdog. You are the underappreciated channel. Like, we just want to see you succeed. And then you reach a certain milestone where people start to squint at you. And they're like, you know what? I don't want you to succeed anymore. You're just some big, fancy, rich YouTuber. And you know what the hell with you? You're fat. You know, like that's like
there's it's weird, right? When the turn happens, it's yeah. so weird.
And there's like
I've
a certain milestone.
Years.
Where you go from being the underdog to being the big fancy YouTuber and people start to root against you. And it's just human nature. You know, everybody sure. loves an underdog and nobody likes a big fancy celebrity, or like very few people, less people like the big fancy celebrity.
It's weird. I've been able to clock, like I remember in the early days, certain, cause you know, like you always see the same comments from people. And after a while, I'm sure yep. you can relate to this. Like, you know the name of somebody, like a subscriber, you know yeah. the photo, and to a point, like you kind of become friends with the person. Cause like I can name, there's actually, I'll give a plug to one, Gusto Saint Cool, dude who has always leaves the, there's, it's an old man photo of like mm-hmm. this old grumpy man, always leaves the funniest comments on my videos, been doing it for years. Every time that I see one of his comments, it makes me smile. It lights me up. So I'm like, oh, I love this guy or girl or whoever it is. And, you know, I've been able over the years to, I remember certain people early on that would like, were the people that I would always, cause I've always tried to respond to as many comments as possible. I'm a really personable person. I love responding to people. And I remember certain people that used to be like, oh, great video, or would ask me a question and I would answer it. And then like 3 years later, those are the same people that then would leave like really negative, rude comments or be like, God, I hate you. Oh, I thought you left already. Like it just like say stuff like that. And that's so weird to me because yeah. it's like, what happened? Like,
and honestly,
what happened
those,
in your brain?
Well, and honestly, those are the ones that hurt the worst. You know,
oh, yeah,
someone
are.
That used to be supportive and no longer is for whatever reason. Like
yeah,
those
Gusto,
are the ones that cut, you know.
Gusto, don't turn on me, bud. Like I look forward to those comments. If you're listening right. to this, don't do it. Don't do it. That'll break me.
As a photographer, the worst thing that you can have happen is you can have like petapixel or f-stoppers or shutterbug have one of those kind of you know websites pick up one of your videos for its educational content. Like, you know, I teach Photoshop stuff, so occasionally like f-stoppers will pick up one of my videos and just use it as an article. But then what happens is you get that community that doesn't know who you are, doesn't really care to know who you are. But
oh, yeah.
they do have something angry to say to you, and then they they find you, and then they just start flooding your channel with all of this negative stuff.
Oh, yeah. I've had that a lot. I've had that a whole lot.
But what I was getting ready to say is that one of the differences between how you handled it and how I handled it is that I let it really impact my my creative motivation to where, like, you know, when I go out in the field and I'm, you know, I'm out with the purpose of doing nothing but landscape photography. I always have a choice. I can either be just a photographer who's sitting there listening to birds chirp, watching a beautiful sunset and clicking my shutter once in a while, or I can be a landscape photography vlogger that has to document everything I do and move my camera 100 times and create this, you know, this video of my experience, do all the editing, put it up on YouTube, and then get negative comments. And I've found myself lately being like, you know what? They don't deserve that. Those trolls don't deserve to come along on this trip. I'm just going to be a photographer tonight. And it's really my channel has suffered for it because I just don't have the content that I used to have. And it's because I've allowed those negative comments to impact me so dramatically to where I sit there, I question myself. I'm like, do I want to be a photographer or do I want to be a YouTuber today? And a lot of times, you know what? I love photography. Sometimes I don't love being a YouTuber. And that's kind of how it's impacted me. Like now, but the problem is I also love putting together those videos. You know, I love the video editing and putting together like this cool cinematic story of my experience and the music design. I love putting it all together. I just don't love, you know, some of the negative attention that it gets.
No, and so you say that's the difference between us. It's not, because I, same thing. Like I went through the exact same thing, because that's how I feel about trips and hiking and stuff. People would ask me that for years. It's like, well, doesn't filming all the time and stopping and like walking past the camera three times, and doesn't that affect your hike? And for years I was like, no, not at all. Like, and I'll still say that to a point, no, because like people will always say things like, why don't you stop and smell the roses? And it's like, well, that's me stopping and smelling the roses. Like yeah. I get to see that same section of trail like three times as I'm setting my camera up. So it makes me appreciate, especially like, you know, framing a shot or something. Like I really got to look at it before I set the camera up and then walk past it. But it did start taking me enjoying certain hikes and stuff away from me. Where I did get to the point to where I was like, I just kind of want to do this hike and not have to film, not have to worry about whipping out the camera and doing a little narrative thing. And then, I don't know for me if it was because of negative comments or anything. I think it just like, just the process of doing it just kind of started. Cause again, it's the same thing. Like after so long.
Yeah. You've already done that video.
Yeah. It doesn't get your creative juices flowing to be like, oh, I'm going to pick up my camera again. And I'm going to say, oh, you know, like today I hiked 22 miles and tonight I'm having couscous for dinner again. And it's like, right. You know what I mean? Yeah, so at some point, but with that being said, then I battle with it because when it comes to at least hiking videos, or like, I guess you could call it a vlog, the editing process, I absolutely adore.
I do too.
Revisiting that trip that I went on. I love hearing and seeing what I said and what I did and then cutting it to music and making it dramatic sometimes and making it goofy and putting like stupid ass cuts in there where like all of a sudden the music drops out and like you can hear me like scratching my ass or something. Like I love that stuff.
Yeah, because it's creative.
That's when I feel creative. But one thing that I was going to ask you about is the thing that I have noticed lately is because, you know, the channel suffers, you don't put out content. And I know this is kind of conspiracy theory, but I bet you've thought about it too. I feel like now I'll put a lot of effort into doing a video, or even like a couple years ago, put a lot of effort into the video. And because I didn't make the thumbnail right, or because I didn't give it the right title, the algorithm then doesn't show it to the audience.
Right.
And I know it doesn't show it to the audience because like, you know, I'll put out a video and I'm not trying to toot my own horn or say like, you know, I'm not trying to sound like I don't appreciate, you know, anybody watch my videos, but like one Thursday I'll put out a video and it'll get like, you know, 60,000 views in a week. And then the next week I'll put out a video at the exact same time, exact same day, and it'll get like 15,000 views.
Right.
And then, you know, 3 weeks later, I'll see a comment from somebody when I put out a video that is successful that will say stuff like, oh, you're back. Like, I haven't seen a video from you in a while. And I'm like, why haven't you seen a video?
Exactly.
From me
Thanks, YouTube. Exactly. Thanks, algorithm. Like, right. And, you know, this kind of brings me back to a good photographer friend that I have, Josh Cripps. I don't know if you know Josh Cripps. Anyways, he was one of probably the first American YouTube photography educators for landscape photography. He had a channel. He's had a channel forever. When I started photography, he had already had a channel for quite a while. Anyways, he had this really successful channel, got up to, you know, probably 700,000 followers or more. Maybe he's at 1 million or something. And then he got burnt out. He took a multi-year break. And then when he came back, YouTube just didn't show his video to anybody. So, like, here you have this channel with, you know, 1 million subscribers, and it's getting a fraction of the views of someone with, like, a channel that's not even 10 times smaller, you know?
Yeah.
And there's definitely those algorithm things at play. YouTube doesn't want you to take a break. YouTube wants you to be an ad revenue generating machine, and the hell with your creativity.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not about mental health or creativity. It's about ad revenue generation.
And then again, like, I feel like as a creative person that's, like, been dumped. So, like, you went out, and, you know, I went against my better judgment of, like, do I film this hike? Do I not film this hike? Oh, I'll film it. I'll do the vlogging. I get back, I put all this time into the edit, I'm having a fun time, I pour my heart and soul into storytelling, and then you put it out, and then it doesn't really show it to anybody, and then all of a sudden, like, then that punches down, and, like, that, like, you know, it grinds down that whole mental health aspect of, like, oh, why did I do this? Like, you know, not even about the money or anything, it's not about, like, monetizing it, it's just, like, wanting people to see it.
Yeah, exactly. You spend all this time on this creative thing that you're proud of. The reason we do that is because we like to be like, look, see what I did? You know?
Yeah, and you want someone to pat you on the head and be like, good boy, you're a good boy.
Thanks, I'll go do it again. You know? And I have another YouTube friend who his channel is just growing really, really fast. And he's fully acknowledged the fact that, and he goes into it with more logic than I do. I go into it with too much emotion. Like, I create this cinematic video, and then I get bummed when nobody watches that, but they watch this sitting at my desk video where I just happen to use the word Lightroom, and then suddenly everybody opens it because people just are like, shut up and teach me something, you know? And he fully acknowledges it, and he's like, why would I spend all the time and energy to, you know, create an in the field video that is going to get just the tiniest fraction of the views as this other video where I can sit in front of my desk, talk for 10 minutes, post it with a couple keywords, and it'll far exceed anything that other video does. And the problem with me is that, like, I'm approaching YouTube not for the money aspect of it, because I don't make crap from YouTube. I don't make
enough.
That's
something that people do not understand.
Right.
Same.
And, like, it's not about the money that I generate from YouTube. It's a way for me to connect with other like-minded people that are interested in the same things. And then I can put this work into this creative thing that I'm proud of and put it on YouTube. And if I'm not proud of that thing, why the hell am I even doing it? Because I'm not making money. And
it's the same thing. And that's why I wanted to have this conversation with you. Cause, like, I'm like, oh, I can connect to somebody. It's like different niche, same problem, because I'm the same way of, like, I've been saying that for years. And, like, you know, you always have your people like, no, you do this so you can make money. It's like, look, I could have went and got a job at working at Walmart and made more money than I've made on YouTube.
We do from YouTube. Yeah.
I promise.
It's Squarespace. Squarespace is where you make, like, if we're going to be totally transparent, back apparently, when I used to accept Squarespace ads.
I've never done it.
Like,
is
that,
it good?
Yeah. It's much better. I mean, so, like, with two videos where I say, this video is brought to you by Squarespace, and then the little ad there, I would make more from those two videos than I would for the entire month. I'd probably make double from those two videos than I would the entire month from YouTube ad revenue. So,
Squarespace, if you're watching, reach out.
Right, exactly. So there's a reason you see all those Squarespace ads, is because they pay pretty damn well. And those are the things. That's where the YouTubers make their money, is ad placement.
By the way,
placement.
Not sponsored by Squarespace, but...
but, if you
accepting.
Want.
Accepting.
Right, exactly. But for me, YouTube was never about, like, trying to make money. It was about, you know, it was about getting my creative creations out in front of eyeballs.
Yeah,
because, You know, musicians don't play in their garage. They dream of playing on a stage in front of people and letting people listen to their music. That's part of the creative process, I think.
Yeah, most musicians hate, like, studio time. Like, most musicians hate recording an album, but they love the live performance. They love being out in front of the audience and engaging.
The give and the take and the two-way conversation. And that's why you and I read comments, is because we actually want it to be a two-way conversation, not just, here, let me ram some information down your throat and then I'll never talk to you again.
Exactly. Yeah, it's really, I won't say, the word's not satisfying. It's relieving to hear you say that, because, like, that's something I think about all the time. And I'll talk to people, friends that I have that you know, aren't creatives, or at least not creatives in this space, right? Like, not doing YouTube videos. And, like, nobody gets it. And everybody wants to give you, like, the simple answer of just, like, oh, just don't read the comments.
Yeah.
Or, oh, why do you care? Just make the video that people want. Yeah, make the video that people want and just make money off of it. And it's like, but that's not why I'm doing it. Like, and it's hard. And then I battle with myself, because it's like, well, I got to do something to make money. And then, like, oh, do I do this? Do I give all of my time to it? And then it's free. So it's like this constant, like, battle back and forth with creativity. Yeah, man, it's maddening. It is.
And reading those comments and having that two-way conversation, you're inviting the opportunity for some of those people back to you to not say things that we want to hear.
People aren't wrong when they're like, well, you did it to yourself. You put yourself out there. It's like, you're 100% right. Like,
absolutely.
That is the idiot in me of, like, I'm just going to keep coming back, and I'm going to keep coming back for more and more and more and more. And I mean, even now, like, I was dealing hard with my mental health. I cut it off. I took a year away, and I did a bunch of trips where I didn't actually, I filmed a lot of them, but they're all sitting on a hard drive. Nobody's seen it yet. And it was so satisfying, and I felt creative for just the sake of being creative again. And you and I were having a pre-conversation before the podcast. Like, I started shooting film photography, like, just because I was like, I'm not going to show these to anybody, but they're fun to do. And I get to play with the camera and I get to play with the film and it was like this creative thing. But now I feel like I'm in a good place to come back to it a little bit and start dabbling in it a little bit, but it is hard because, I think that, you know, like I was saying, creative juices, it comes in spurts, and it's like, I feel like I've lost a lot of steam. Like the me from 4 years ago, like, I have a list. This is no joke. I wish I had it behind me here and I could do a show and tell. I have a list in the other room. It's a whiteboard, and there are 12. Anyone that's listening to this, that's been waiting for me to make new YouTube content again, there are 12 videos listed out in there. I have, like, I've scripted out all of them of what I'm going to say. I've done all my research on all of them. I'm ready to go. The me from 4 years ago, I would knock it out in a week. I would have just been like, boom, 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 recording every day, getting in the edit, loving it, going in the flow. And I have a video edit that I've been stuck in for 4 weeks. 4 weeks. Now, granted, I'm doing other things too. Like, I'm doing the podcast now. I own a gear company now, randomly. So I'm doing those things, but it's like, it's so hard to have the same creative flow and the same creative juices that I had then. And I don't know what it is. Like, I feel like my heart's in it. I feel like I want to do it, and I feel creative. And I mean, obviously I've drummed all the ideas for all the videos up. I felt creative enough to do that, but it's like finding the grind. It's like the grind is starting to go out of me a little bit. I'm starting to get wore down.
Well, you're turning into the boxer that doesn't really want to put the time into the training, you know? Like, it can relate to sports as well, you know? You have the boxer that, like, in the beginning they're hungry and they just want it and they outwork everybody, and then they reach the top and they reach their goals, and then there's that little bit of drama that happens and life happens, and then they get knocked down, and the truly great ones, they have the drive to push through that time period where, like, they can still work and train as hard as they once did. Yeah. And some of us, man, when we get knocked down, it gets harder to get back up.
It does.
Emotionally.
Oh my God.
For me, like, I think that my struggle is that I love creating videos. a lot of times I just wish it wasn't me talking in them. It's like, I get so self-conscious about the things that I've already said, and how am I going to say that in a different way than I've already said it? Like, you can only talk about photography stuff so many different times and so many different ways before you just turn into the old man that repeats himself. You know, you sound like a broken record. And that, for me, like, creatively, the videos that I truly enjoy creating the most are the ones where it's cinematic and it's the story of a day, of a time, and it's not about me at all. It's about where I'm at and what I'm doing, and I'm not actually talking in it at all. Those are my favorite videos to create. But, you know, occasionally you'll get the comment saying, like, I didn't learn a single thing in this video. You didn't even talk. And I'm like, well, no shit. Oh, like, I know I didn't talk and I didn't want to talk. And it wasn't for you anyway. So just go away, mean guy. Mean guy number 32.
It was like, it was for me. And I thought I'd be nice and share it with all the rest of you.
Right, exactly. Like, and, glad I set up all those camera angles. Sorry to let you down again, Bob.
Damn you, Bob.
It's always just Bob.
Take it easy.
You forgot your pills, Bob. Again, Bob.
So, I mean, like, for you then, I guess, like, where you're at on everything, like, what's your next pivot? Like, how have you been keeping your, I guess, creative juices flowing? Like, have you taken a pretty big step back from YouTube? I see you pop out a video every once in a while.
Yeah, I pop out a video when I feel like I have something new to say. The biggest change really for YouTube for me is the fact that the lack of in the field videos, and that comes from, you know, kind of like I was mentioning, where like I can go out and I can either choose to be a filmmaker or I can just be a photographer listening to birds chirp. And there's so much more peace in that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that I've taken a large enough break that I feel inspired and motivated again. And I think that there's a lot of value in just allowing yourself to have a good proper break, because you can't do the same thing over and over and over and not experience burnout. And, you know, if you take a break, you're no longer burnt out. And I feel like I'm finally getting to that point. I actually fly to Iceland in the morning and I'm hanging out with Thomas Heaton and some other friends, and I plan on filming the whole thing. And whether, like, I sit down and actually edit it all, well, we'll see if that happens. We'll see if I say anything that I'm not annoyed by.
Dude, that's how I've been over the last year. Like, I filmed so much. I went to Nepal last year. I filmed all of that. I did a bike tour all of Great Britain. I filmed all of that. I just went and did the Tour de Mont Blanc and, like, did some mountaineering in the Alps. Filmed all of that. But then, like, I get it here. Like, I put it on a hard drive, and I'm like...
Well, maybe we'll come back to that. Yeah, that's how I've been with my photography, honestly. Like, you know, I've kind of gotten to a point where, like, you know, I'm taking all of these photos, but I'm not printing very many of them. I've got like a couple big prints floating around the house. I want to do a book, and I have projects in mind. Nice. But until those projects are actually like on the ground and running, I feel less inspired to sit down and process some of the thousands of photos that I've been taking, because I've still been going on all the same trips. You know, I teach like a bunch of workshops every year. So I've been doing tons of photography. I just haven't been processing tons of photography, and I certainly haven't been sharing those trips as much on YouTube, but I think that's going to change here soon.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I'm trying, man. It's like, I feel like I'm about to go do a Pacific Crest Trail days. This is going to come out way after that. So if you're listening to this, you're like, next year? No. these were recorded before. And then I'm headed back to Nepal in September. And then, like,
awesome.
I'm actually waiting because I don't have any traveling to do from like the end of September to like middle of November. So it's just like, for me, I got that big list of all these YouTube videos. I feel creative and I'm like, all right, here's my time again. And I'm going to come in, and it kind of sucks like that we're creators on this thing that I feel like creatives in the past never had an issue with. And that is the fact that, like, because if you're not consistent when you're ready to come back and those creative juices, like I said, it goes in cycles. When it goes off again and you're like, all right, here's my time again. It's like, will the algorithm allow you, or will the audience allow you? Or has the audience, because it is such a disposable audience are not as disposable. You're disposable, really, because there's so many people, right? There's so many people doing photography tutorials. There's so many people doing backpacking and hiking and gear videos. It's like, well, they're not giving it to me anymore, so I'll go over here now.
Yeah.
And it's like, it. I feel like there's this thing over the last handful of years is like, now is a really amazing time to be a creative, and like, because you have all these platforms, it's free. Anybody can learn how to do it, and you can get your art out to the entire world by just like hitting a button. Where like back in the day, you know, like we'll use music as an example again. You had to go play shows, you had to be discovered, you had to, you know, get an advance of millions of dollars to make an album, then put it out, cross your fingers, hope the album sells. Yep. Now you can literally record something in your bedroom, put it on the internet, hit share, and boom, it's in front of millions of people. But the downside of that is because it is, I feel like creation has become so disposable because everybody's yep. doing it all the time that it's hard. Because when that creative spurt goes off again and you're ready to go, will the audience be there? And will the platform, I guess we'll yeah. say, allow you to share it with people?
it's like the record label telling John Lennon that no, you took too big of a time off. We're exactly. only gonna share this with a poor. You don't get to be on our label. You'll be on this small label. Or oh, you're the Beatles. Well, yeah, it's taken a 3-year gap. We're not interested anymore.
That's something I say all the time. It's like I'm a big music geek. So like when I find out like one of my second favorite band, they're probably close neck and neck. Smashing Pumpkins and You're Actually Going to Iceland, Sigur Rós.
Okay.
Do you know the band Sigur Rós?
I don't, actually.
Oh.
I'll check them out.
I'll turn you on to them. Icelandic band. You know, they just put out an album for the first time in 10 years. And like, you know, when they announced that they were going to put out a new album, I wasn't like, oh, screw them, because they haven't done anything for 10 years. I
was they forgot about me.
Super right. excited, right? Like,
yeah.
And it's weird that with YouTube and stuff, like at least I've experienced that, especially over the last handful of months. I've started putting out videos again, and inevitably I'll get my negative comments now aren't like, your beard's stupid, or you wave your hands too much, or you move your eyebrows. It's like, wait, I thought you quit. And I'm like,
yeah,
yeah, but I'm back. And people are like, yeah, be gone. And it's like, oh, Jesus.
Right.
Like, why?
the most valuable option that we have is that hide user from channel button.
I
hate doing it too, but you know, if it comes between, if it's between my mental health and this person's right to comment on my channel, like I'll give him, he can comment on someone else's channel.
That's
I'm sure he'll
point.
Continue to comment on other videos.
That's a point. Again, folks, be nice. Don't Bob. Just be nice and like allow people to, if you don't like it, like if you don't like what somebody's putting out, or you don't like that they're back, just like go somewhere else. Like
right.
go.
I just wish people would interact with people the way that they would in real life. You know,
yeah,
if you wouldn't say it
nice.
To someone's face, maybe you shouldn't say it online. And it's just one of those things that we haven't really come to terms with in this whole internet age, like how to behave in public. You know, we're having to completely relearn how to behave as a society with other humans. Because when you're behind a keyboard, there's no repercussions. And when you say it to someone's face, whether it's like, you know, the look of sadness on their face or the bloody nose that they give you, there's usually a repercussion for being a jerk to someone in person. And
yeah, nobody's held responsible for anything that they do. And, you know, I guess whatever.
Maybe in my future, you know, my future internet world, there will be repercussions of some kind. Maybe like you lose your ability to comment on whatever, on leave comments or leave messages if you say something mean or whatever. Like there needs to be some form of repercussion. You know,
it needs to be something, because I definitely think it's wreaking havoc on, and you know, it's not even like the people that are getting it, but I think it's really like being able to do stuff like that. I think it's wreaking havoc on people that are interacting with its mental health. Like when your brain thinks that that's okay, or whenever you create some sort of like, I don't know how familiar you are with parasocial disorder, which I find super fascinating. If you really want to deep dive into like the crazy mental part of it and the science behind like kind of what we're talking about, check out what parasocial disorder is. It's really interesting. I've been just fascinated with it for like a year.
Interesting.
And, yeah. it's helped me check a lot of things and be like, oh, well, when someone leaves me that negative comment, like I try to tell myself, and it's still hard because we're lizard brain, but it's like, oh, it's not me. It's this person.
Yeah.
Like this
someone person. Needs a hug.
Right. Yeah. They need a hug. They need to talk to somebody. They need to check their mental health. But yeah, I think that that's what it's all about. It's like, if you're listening to this, you are a creative, if you're a YouTuber or someone on Instagram, a photographer, videographer, if you're thinking about getting into it, just remember to consistently check your mental health, take that break. And, absolutely. You know, you might come back to it and it might not be there anymore. You might have to start from the bottom again and build yourself up, but I think it's, you know, better than kind of losing yourself to it.
And sure. I think, I don't know how old you are, but I feel like we're
turn 38 tomorrow, actually.
Okay, so we're not so different. I'm 40-something, 43. God.
Bury the lead old. On that. Yeah, 40, whatever.
I'm 40-something. But I think that, you know, at our age, we're almost at a disadvantage with social media simply because we grew up in a time where it wasn't a thing. And right. now we don't know how to pace ourselves. And I think one of the most important skills for any creative person to learn is to learn when to cut yourself off from social media and when, how much is too much given, you know, what it does to your mental health, how much do you interact with it, especially in when you're in a creative, creative field like we are, where we are just kind of swimming in social media all the time because that's how we market, you know, and it's where our creative outlet goes, you know, it goes out.
We don't hang our painting on a wall. Like we hang our painting on the Instagram, on these apps. Right.
Yeah. And so we're just constantly swimming in that world. And I think it's going to be really important, you know, for the next generation and for all future humans to learn how much is too much and learn how to moderate how much time they spend in that world, because it's becoming more and more apparent that there are repercussions for being and living in that social media world. Yeah. It's not good for us mentally, and we need to learn, especially, you know, we love the outdoors. I think everybody listening to your podcast right now absolutely loves the outdoors. That is our natural habitat.
Yeah.
You know, not this social media realm that no wonder it makes us depressed, because that's not where we belong. It's just where we happen to share and where we happen to connect with other people that are like-minded. So we have to remember that we have to moderate that amount of time and allocate more time to where we actually belong, which is outside.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You hit the nail on the head with that, man.
Awesome.
Well, dude, I'm super excited to see, like, after you've taken your big creative break, like, I'm excited to see kind of, I guess, the maybe new creative path you go down, or maybe some... maybe back to the drawing board, or back to the same videos, or are you going to try something different? Or?
Like I feel like I had kind of started going down the path that I want to go down. It just happened to happen at a time of near burnout. And so
that happens.
I want to do more of the cinematic, you know, telling the story of a day. One of my favorite YouTubers is, what's her name? I'm not going to remember it. Anyways, this Chinese girl who has this amazing YouTube channel where it's all, there's no dialogue, there's no speaking. It's just her doing cool stuff.
Yep.
And it's filmed in a really beautiful way and it's vastly interesting. And the cool part about it is that she's from China and there's no language barrier, because here I am as an American watching it. And because there's no dialogue, it doesn't matter that she's from another country. So that's,
That's cool.
So that's kind of my new direction that I want to go in. It's just taking the time to decide that I'm going to be a filmmaker, not just the photographer listening to birds chirp.
That's I'm right there with you. That's kind of what I have planned for a lot of the stuff I'm working on right now too. And some of the trips, like there's a lot less of this.
Yeah.
And a lot more just like, you know, kind of showing people what it looks like through my eyes, versus, you know, looking at me.
What's up? It's your boy. It's your boy, Darwin.
It's your boy, Darwin. We out here.
We out here. Oh, yeah. I don't want to be that person either.
Well, man, I'm excited to see what you have coming up, and thanks so much for coming on here and having this discussion with me. Like I said, it makes me feel better. It helps me check my mental health to have a discussion with somebody like you that is basically, you know, in a completely different genre, but is going through the exact same thing. And it definitely makes me hopeful that, or not hopeful, but it gives me, I'm going to stumble over my words here.
You're not alone.
I'm not alone. It makes me feel good that I'm not alone.
Yeah. Nobody wants to be all alone, and you're not alone, man.
No, not at all. Well, good luck on keeping your mental health checked, and I'll try to do the same, and have a good time in Iceland, man. I'm excited to see what comes from that. A huge thanks to Nick for joining me as co-host on this episode. Make sure to go check out some of his amazing photography at Nick Page Photography on Instagram, and check out some of his super helpful tutorials on his YouTube channel at Nick Page. If you want to help support the podcast and get bonus content like early access to episodes, hours of exclusive videos, and even a weekly bonus podcast with yours truly, you can become a member of our Patreon community, and I'll leave a link down in the show notes for that. If you've been enjoying the podcast, do us a favor and give it a rating and or a review wherever you're currently listening. Make sure to check out theoutdoorevolution.com to keep up to date with all of our new articles, films, products, and more. You can follow us over on Instagram at The Outdoor Evolution. And folks, that's going to wrap up another episode for season 4. Thanks so much for tuning in.